two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective, oh. And did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatolydibop shabadooey. You'll revel in hilarity. It's pork therapy.
Hello.
Hello.
Wow, that was so suave. You know, I had someone tell me one time.
Rico, suave.
That is what you are.
What did someone tell you once?
I think it was the first time I was hosting Free Talk Live, and someone called and said I should run a smooth jazz station or something like that.
I have heard you on She Talk Live. I've never heard you when you've done Free Talk Live, but, you know, just the Sunday show, and you have a very sexy, smooth, good, clean, articulate radio voice. It's
why,
excellent.
Thank you, Mike.
So that's probably how you sound on this podcast, too.
You know, Mike, one of the reasons that I love to do this show with you is because I think you have an awesome radio voice as well.
Why? Thank you. I don't, but thank you.
Really? Not even when you sing on the podcast?
Oh, especially not when I sing. When I sing, it's for fun. It's not for talented singing.
Well, it certainly is fun, and I also think you have a good voice.
Well, thanks.
Speaking and singing. And, you know, you're just an all-around fun guy, and that brings us to our question. Fun guy?
How? Yeah.
Our question.
That
was a horrible segue.
No, that was inspired. That was inspired because that's like a joke sub-definition of our topic. That was great. So fun guy, how does that... Oh, fun guy, I see. Okay,
like a mushroom.
Well, how does that relate to our question?
Well, Mike, I'll tell you. Our question is about culture.
And what's the definition of culture?
Well, before we get to that, we should probably define ourselves. Right? Because we didn't even say
well,
who we are.
Oh, good point. Yeah. Oh, welcome to Pork Therapy.
There's a little teaser for you.
Holy
there. But
crap.
Yes, of course, we are Pork Therapy. I'm Stephanie.
I'm Mike.
And
I'm forgetful.
Well, it's okay. That's why we're in this together. We remind each other. We help each other out. But right now, I'm going to remind the listeners to go to our website, which is porctherapy.com. You probably won't find anything growing on it, but you'll find some ideas that will grow on you.
Wow. Wow.
Come on, I thought that was cute.
That was cute. But wow.
Okay, well, enough with that. If you want to email us your relationship questions, we are, of course, the podcast about voluntary relationships, right, in a voluntary society. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're heard on the Liberty Radio Network, which is at lrn.fm. Check out all the great liberty-oriented content there. But if you would like to send us your own relationship questions, you can email us questions@porktherapy.com. And that's, of course, porctherapy.com.
Any kind of relationship and any aspect of relationships.
Exactly. Exactly. Even the relationship between mold spores and the growing medium.
And the
right?
fungi.
And the fungi sitting right next to me. But yes, we do talk about any kind of relationships, you know, friends, family, work relationships, love relationships. Anything that helps people get along and form the basis of a voluntary society in a way that's more happy and more expedient, I guess.
Yeah.
Cool.
What
so,
she said.
And you can also call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4, right,
and
Mike?
If you do, leave a message or leave a question as a message, and we'll play it on the next show.
Exactly. Exactly. But today we do have an email question, right, Mike?
Yes, we do.
Cool. So, you know, I feel like a fraud now that we've admitted on our last couple of shows that there is actually no coin, because we usually pretend to flip a coin and it's like a running joke that stopped being funny long ago.
We could Rochambeau. I'm sure that makes good audio.
What is that?
Rock, scissors, paper.
Oh, you're just too advanced for me. I had no idea what you were talking about. But you see, you learn something new every episode of Pork Therapy. And we're smooth jazz.
And we're back.
And we're back, listening to the soft sounds of Pork Therapy, coming over the Liberty Radio Network.
Alrighty then. So, would you like to read this question? This is a relatively short one.
Sure, yeah, I'll read the question.
All right.
Okay, so the question asker says, I think the word culture is used too loosely. And of course, that was the reference that we tried
culture.
To intro the show with.
Cultivation of bacteria.
Culture.
Fun guy. Got the links? Gotcha.
Cool. Now that we're clear on that.
Yeah.
I don't think he means that kind of culture, though. He says, I think the word culture is used too loosely. There is a culture for everything, it seems. There's a culture for a country, a state, nationalities, behaviors, hip-hop, etc., etc., etc. Within each culture, there are subcultures all over the place. Especially in America.
Well, subcultures are just flying out the window.
Yeah, they're everywhere. And then he goes on, but I mean, what is the definition of culture in your mind? What is culture and what is its fundamental definition? Isn't civilization a culture, and doesn't that mean that there is a world culture? At our core, don't most human beings live their lives the same way throughout the whole world? Work in some way to buy food and enjoy the fruits of their labor with love and happiness? So with all that said, I'd like to hear what Stephanie and Mike have to say about culture and all its various forms and how it affects people and their relationships from a liberty perspective. And he tied in our tagline. How
he
cute.
Did.
This is a gold star question.
Even though technically he didn't or she didn't ask a question, she ended it with three question marks.
That's
she said, I'd like
true.
To hear, but it's not really a question.
Oh, Mike, more of a I'm glad you're keeping people honest,
I
you know. This is a culture of grammar anarchy. I'm just kidding about that.
So,
you know, tangent
yeah.
alert.
What
but,
do you know?
But this kind of relates. I am a person who is very, very, very into grammar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost a obsession for me. And I really always appreciate good grammar. And there are times when I read wonderful blog posts with amazing content, but then they have grammar mistakes. It just irks me so bad. Can you tell I'm getting passionate about this?
Yeah.
So why am I an anarchist, but I love rules when it comes to grammar?
Well,
I don't understand. I need therapy.
For one,
pork therapy.
One, you've got, is that a false dichotomy you're dealing with, or they're not mutually exclusive? They're not even in the same industry. I mean,
yeah.
Anarchy doesn't mean no rules. It means no rulers.
Yes, that's true.
A true anarchist, I think, knows that there need to be rules. They're just private rules.
Mm-hmm.
They're not rules forced upon anyone. They're in my house, on my property, I have my rules.
Yes, but I didn't agree to the rules of grammar. They were forced upon me.
No,
I suppose
they weren't forced upon you. You learned them.
Well, I suppose I could choose to speak a different language English.
You can also make up
your
own language.
Or I could choose to ignore the rules of English
right.
grammar.
I don't think language is forced upon you.
Really? You have no choice in the matter. I mean,
sure, you can learn other languages,
but the first language that you learn is determined by your parents and where you're arbitrarily born, which will tie back into the question, of course.
It will. Boy, we are on a tangent here, but I see your point that whatever language your parents choose or languages your parents choose to teach you first is not your choice.
Right.
But let's say they didn't teach you a language, you would learn it. At least to some degree of communication. Without being taught, you would learn basic communication just by hearing them. It's just what you're around. I mean, as a little infant, you don't have the ability, let alone the ability to choose, to go travel to Europe and learn a different language or hear a different language. You can only hear what's around your crib or whatever, but...
Well, that's sort of my point. It's like, I haven't really completed this thought. I bet it sounds pretty ridiculous to people who are listening, but follow my logic here.
Huh?
So as a kid, when you're learning your first language or languages, you have to speak those languages in order to survive. Because if you don't communicate with your parents, you can't get your basic needs for food and shelter and warmth and stuff met. And so you are pretty much forced to speak that language. I suppose you could choose not to communicate at all, but then you would starve.
Well, what happens to, say, autistic kids or... Perhaps deaf kids or, you know, kids who can't take a normal language.
Yeah.
I mean, they
don't communicate
right.
with
now,
the same English that most people
right.
use.
Right. Now, a deaf person, at least in America, the parents would recognize it sooner or later and probably learn American Sign Language and pass it on or teach them that or give them classes or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's a first language that's theoretically forced on them.
Mm-hmm.
But until that time, they're probably pointing and grunting and making up a language, as it were, to communicate,
mm-hmm.
I need food, I have to poo or whatever.
Yes, that's very sophisticated.
I don't disagree with you that at least the first language that someone learns is not of their choice. But I'm not sure I agree that it's forced on them.
I mean, it's one of those gray areas, right? It's not like someone's holding a gun to a baby's head and saying, speak English or I will hurt you.
You know what? Could you live without communication, especially when you're dependent?
Not without communication, without language. Because, I mean, verbal communication.
Verbal, possibly, but not when you're an infant and can't even control your limbs yet for gestures or pointing or writing.
Well, infants can't talk, though.
No.
Before they learn to talk.
You know what? What about that communication? Crying and smiling.
Right, right. That's what I meant. Okay. That's, like, essentially nonverbal.
Yeah. Where was I going with that? I have no idea, but this is like...
Well, we were talking about whether it's force or not. Oh, right.
Are you forced to breathe the... Let's say your parents give birth to you and they live on a farm. Are you forced to breathe cow poo air, methane, because that's where you live? Or do you just breathe it because that's all there is?
Well, you breathe it because it's all there is, but you can't remove yourself from that situation.
Right, but are you forced to breathe it? Or is it just what's there? It just is what is.
You're kind of forced by circumstances.
Okay, but I don't consider that aggression.
Right,
because
you can't
get rest.
So it
might be forced, but it's not aggression. And that's what I think of the first language. You might be forced to learn it. Learn the language of your parents choosing, but I don't think that's aggression.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's not aggression. I mean, unless, of course, you know, you go to Catholic school. Well, here's an example. My grandfather was raised Catholic, I guess, and he went to some school with a bunch of sadistic, crazy nuns. And because he was naturally left-handed when he was born, they forced him to write with his right hand, and they hit him if he didn't. Yep. And they would smack him on the hand.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you know, he had, I'm sure, many psychological hang-ups, but one of them was poor handwriting his whole life. No one could understand what he really was writing. And so in that situation...
But that's different. That's
aggression.
That's clear physical force and aggression.
Well, right. So that was an example of what would be aggression.
Yes.
But it's not aggression if parents just raise a child speaking a certain language or languages, whatever. So I guess you're right. It's not aggression, but it might kind of be a situation where the incentives are so great to learn that language that it could... I guess, be considered a type of force, although not aggressive force.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should talk about that on another show.
Well, one more thought about this very quick. I want to know, I'm asking the listeners to therapize me, because I'm struggling to figure this out about myself right now. I mentioned a few minutes ago that I'm a huge stickler for grammar, and I really appreciate good grammar, and I kind of revile when I see grammar mistakes and stuff like that. Why am I so bothered when people don't follow the conventions of English grammar and language, even though those conventions are constantly changing? I mean, nowadays, if you use text language and if you say the letter U instead of YOU and the letter FOR instead of FOR, it's shorter, it's more efficient. So why shouldn't I be happy with that? Instead, I see that and I get disgusted. And I think the person is less intelligent or...
Right.
And I hate that. I don't want
to
judge people.
Conclusion.
Yeah.
But it really only does not prove lack of education, not lack of intelligence.
Sure.
Right. You can have someone incredibly intelligent and articulate.
Yeah.
Who don't know grammar or spelling or something like that.
Yeah, and in fact, I'm just thinking of some of the most brilliant people that I know. I've seen them write blog posts. Yes, you, Mike. Of course, you're on that list. Well, actually, Mike, I think you're one of the people who, in my mind, always uses very good grammar, and you're also intelligent.
I dislike emailies and texties, and you know, I don't like two spaces between sentences.
Right,
that's a grammar thing, but that was originated because it was easier to read.
Typewriter.
Yeah, sentences with typewriters, monospace fonts. But anyway,
yeah.
I don't
so
like
antiquated.
The wrong apostrophe. I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah, but yet some of the most brilliant people I know make these stupid grammar mistakes, and I read the stuff and I'm like, I have the tendency to knock down their intelligence a little peg in my mind, and I hate that.
Yeah.
I don't want to think less of them because they missed a word or they misspelled something.
Well, that's an interesting opportunity for the listeners to, instead of asking a question, answer one.
Yeah.
Why don't you guys
therapize me, please.
Give your opinion on why she, and me too to a degree, like or
care so much
about the
grammar.
Rules of grammar. Probably, though, I think part of it for me is, I won't tell it, I'll let the listeners come up with their ideas. We'll do it in another show.
Tell me off the air, yeah. I'm kind of curious to know. Yes, okay. Especially if you think that you are one of the people on my most intelligent list, but yet you have bad grammar, you should write in. Okay, so the question.
Culture.
Should we reread this question?
Well, let's summarize it. Like I think the word culture is used too loosely. Culture could mean anything. It's used a lot.
Yeah.
What do you think it means, Stephanie and Mike? Right?
That's
the summary. Okay, so I kind of agree with him that culture is used basically to mean groups.
Yes. It connotes collectivism in my mind.
Right.
What about you?
Culture. Yeah, actually, it does. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of used to mean, like the examples of the question asker are a country. There's a, you know, American culture.
Mm-hmm.
European isn't a country, but
sure.
French culture.
But he even references, yeah, sorry.
All right. Nationalities, behaviors. I don't know quite what he means by a behavior culture. Like
the drug culture or a hippie culture or something.
There you go.
Yeah.
Behavior. Okay. Lifestyle, but sure.
Sure.
Hip hop. That's a very specific culture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I completely agree that there's all the, those are basically groups. People who like hip hop and behave in a certain way, or people who are hippies or behave, you know, that certain way.
Mm-hmm.
People who live in a certain geographic area.
Yeah.
They're groups.
And so each of those cultures, when we were just talking about that, like hippie culture or southern culture or whatever, when I heard those, I immediately associated stereotypes. Like, when you said hippie, I thought patchouli perfume and dreadlocks and, and like, loose clothing.
Free love, free sex.
yeah, it's not really love.
No.
Most of the
Well,
time.
Actually, it might have been.
Maybe it is.
I wasn't coherent, let's say, at the time of hippiedom, but...
Yeah.
No. But anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, I guess we'll get back to that, because I want to read a definition of culture and how it's not quite accurate to just mean group. But what I agree with the question asker about is... Since it's typically used to mean groups, like he's described, and the question asker says, isn't civilization a culture? Doesn't that mean there's a world culture? Don't most human beings live the same way? I agree. That could be considered a culture, but it would be kind of meaningless.
Human culture?
Yeah. It would be kind of meaningless unless that had some purpose in your conversation to differentiate the human culture from something else. Maybe you're writing science fiction and you have an alien culture, or maybe for some reason you're talking about bug culture or something. I don't know.
Well, but, yeah, it kind of makes the point that I think a culture is meant to differentiate groups within a larger something.
And
that's
technically
really
the human culture, as it were, could be a group within a larger group, but doesn't seem very practical.
Until also, we know about different alien civilizations,
Also, his or her example is, don't most human beings live their life the same way, working to buy food and enjoying the fruits of their labor? I would say most, yes. But what about those? What about some Aboriginal tribe somewhere who really doesn't have any kind of capitalist notions and they don't work and they do have a different culture?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not civilization. Well, I guess some people might claim they're not civilized.
Yes, I know one of those people.
Yeah, so
who might claim that?
I think they are civilized. They're just, I mean, they're not animals running around stabbing everything
they
see.
No,
I think they're civilized, but. They just have a different culture in my mind. And so my point was going to be, there could be a very small percentage of humans on Earth who don't fit this human culture.
Right.
But whatever.
Yeah. I think it's almost an oxymoron to say human culture because culture itself implies a subgroup. But then you get into like, what's the difference between a culture and a subculture? And I think that's arbitrary.
Oh, absolutely.
It probably has something to do with the size, you know, an arbitrary size of a group.
Or maybe just the hierarchy.
And maybe, yeah. But it's almost irrelevant because, you know, what we were talking about before is that culture implies collectivism.
Right.
And along with these descriptions of various cultures come stereotypical notions of what someone who is in that culture
must be like,
behaves like or looks like or acts
before
like.
Before we get into collectivization, let me just read the definition real quick.
Sure, sure.
So instead of meaning just a group of people, technically, culture means the arts and other manifestations of human intellectual achievement regarded collectively. So you might say you might abstract that to mean the physical portrayal of a group's achievements, right? So it doesn't mean a group, technically. It means a group's production. You know, what a group produces. Anyway, that's just a minor difference.
I laughed when you read that definition because I thought it was ironic because they're saying the definition of culture is, you know, the arts and other manifestations of human intellectual achievement. And then the little tagline the dictionary gives as an example is 20th century popular culture. And when I think of popular culture, I think of movie stars getting out of a limo and flashing with no panties and, you know, like,
that's our culture.
And celebrity gossip and all paparazzi. And that's what I think
and
of as
sports
and sports. Yeah. And all this, all the misbehaviors of the professional
and
athletes.
Jackass. You know, the movie Jackass.
I mean, it's just, it's so opposite from the whole idea of intellectual achievement.
Right. It's kind of like the movie Idiocracy.
Yeah.
And the culture of people there.
Yeah. And of course, we'll link to that in the show notes. But yeah, I think you're right, Mike. Over time, it's just gotten so just dumber and dumber and dumber. Although one of the sub-definitions of culture in this dictionary is if you use culture with an adjective, like the drug culture, it could mean the attitudes and behavior characteristic of a particular social group.
Right. So again, that's slightly different than a group of people. It's the collective or generalization of attitudes or behavior of that group. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense too. I think that definition is more in line with what the question asker is referring to.
Probably.
I think he's referring less to the manifestations of a group of people's achievements. It sounds weird even saying that because individuals achieve things, not groups, really.
Right, right.
But it seems like in this question, the question asker is talking about basically cultural stereotypes.
Now, what is a stereotype?
A stereotype, well, we can ask the dictionary again, but it says it's a widely held but fixed and oversimplified image or idea of a particular type of person or thing.
So, oversimplified image. It's a...
Well, yeah, when I talked about the hippie with the patchouli perfume and the loose clothing and the tie-dye.
That's a simplified idea that many people hold about hippies.
And yes. And it may or may not be true.
Of any individual person.
Yes.
Who even considers themselves a hippie, it may or not, may not be true.
Right. Sometimes I think a culture could be defined as what comes out of a group of memes that go together. Or that tend to go together. You know what I mean? Like, okay, so there's memes are basically ideas. And I think that term was coined by Richard Dawkins in The Selfish Gene. And it's basically an idea that propagates itself through mainstream thought or culture, I guess, to use that word. And various memes, I guess, are kind of associated with each other. You know, like you can have sort of networks where they're connected to each other in various ways. But, you know, for instance, Christianity and the South and the Bible. Maybe
and the
KKK. Oh, that's horrible. I don't want to see, but even saying that, I feel very like I'm very much stereotyping. But
sure.
But I think in some people's minds, those are an example of a group of memes that goes together.
Right. A widely held belief about Southerners, perhaps by everyone except for Southerners.
Sure. And perhaps it's even wrong.
Yeah.
Or maybe,
but I would like to point out that stereotypes come into being because they're generally true, or at least generally thought to be true, right? Or were at one point when the meme came to being.
Yeah, I think what you said second was key, that they're generally thought to be true.
Yes.
Although they're not necessarily true.
Right, and again, when I say true, I don't mean for every person who is in that group.
Right.
I mean generally.
Well, and this is a question that comes up in things like medicine a lot. You can look at population statistics and you can predict how likely a person is based on a lot of medicine is stereotyping. So you can take a person's age, gender, family history, and even things like their body type. Like there's a certain
fatty.
Well, I was actually thinking of there was a friend that we both know, actually, who recently had a spontaneous pneumothorax, which means his lungs spontaneously burst in his chest.
Wow.
And
burst, that's
this,
probably painful.
Yes, it was very painful, and we're glad that he's recovered now. But the point is that that condition, spontaneous pneumothorax, is more likely to happen to tall, thin men.
So sometimes doctors will use tall, thin men as a collective group of people to be more wary of this condition?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So, like,
so
if a tall, thin...
So it doesn't mean that all tall, thin men will have this or will get this, but it's a generalization.
Yes. And you got to be careful in medicine, because sometimes if a 25-year-old tall, thin man walks into your office and says, I have this horrible chest pain. It happened completely suddenly. What's wrong with me?
Right.
And then a 50-year-old obese man who smokes cigarettes walks into your office and says, I have this horrible chest pain. It happened really suddenly. What's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. You're thinking spontaneous pneumothorax for the first one and heart attack for the second one, but either could have either.
Yeah.
And so the point that I was trying to make originally with this example is that you can look at population statistics, but they're any individual could deviate from them at any time, and they're useful for predicting risk, but not absolutely what's going to happen to someone.
Right.
And I think so. Sometimes they can be overused, I guess, or people can place too much emphasis on statistics.
So we're talking about statistics as a branch of a stereotype.
Yep.
And that was a branch of a conversation from culture. Do you think culture is the same way used inappropriately to refer to individuals of the groups? Is that what the question asker is even asking?
Yeah. I don't even know if this question asker has a question. He just wants to know our thoughts about culture, and maybe do we think it's overused? And yes, I think people probably do rely too heavily on collectivistic memes such as culture.
Yeah.
And judging people based on what culture they think that the person fits in with.
Right.
Right.
I agree. Collectivizing is so, like your example with the doctors, it's just so vague. It's so not necessarily accurate.
It doesn't apply to individuals.
Yeah, it's barely
so
portrays the idea that you're trying to get across.
It's just very important to remember that people are individuals, you know, and to not allow stereotypes, even if they are based on actual science or population statistics, which often they're not. You know, redheads are more feisty. Where did that come from? Right?
Right.
There's no study that says that.
Redheads are probably, I don't know if this is a good example. Are redheads more likely to have pale skin and thus sunburn easily? Probably there's a combination of genes that make that scientifically, statistically
There is one gene that controls both hair color and skin color, so yes, that's true.
But the other one you said, redheads are feisty?
Yeah. Why would that be true?
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know of any studies that would back that up. So, but yet
that's
it's a widely
like
held belief. I bet you would. You didn't meet a lot of them, Mike. I know about your secret redhead fetish. Just don't read any Murray Rothbard's books, because he's, you know, he uses Murray Rothbard is a libertarian, you know, basically liberty-oriented author. And all of his writing about stereotypes, instead of using, for instance, like black people as an example of a group that gets discriminated against, he'll say something like, well, suppose a business owner decides that he doesn't want to allow redheads into his store. And he just uses redheads as the example of the persecuted group in every single instance. So it's
You might as well. They have no soul.
Oh.
That's not a culture. Oh. That's a stereotype. That's not even a stereotype. That's a joke.
That's just a ridiculous.
Yeah.
Mike, do you remember when you posted Ginger on our Facebook page and it was like an autocorrect from your phone?
Yes.
Mike posted something to our Facebook page saying, like, we're Ginger recording tonight.
Yeah. It was supposed to be, we're going to record, but it changed. Autocorrects changed it to Ginger.
Yeah. Anyway, so, okay, one thing that I wanted to say about this culture, you know who loves culture and who loves stereotyping and putting people into groups? Guess.
Kermit the Frog.
Yes.
Oh,
but who else?
That was a pretty lucky guess. I have no idea who. The government.
Yeah,
yes,
the state.
You're right.
The state. Because
it just works so well for government to to classify and categorize and put in a little box and file away.
Yeah, and it's so much easier when people do that job for them and
After
put themselves
all,
into groups and right. say things like, well, I'm a Patriots fan, or I'm a Southerner,
or
whatever.
A Republican or Democrat.
I'm a Republican. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great example, Mike. I was kind of thinking sports teams and stuff, but yeah, you're right.
That's
essentially the same thing.
It's just a sport. It's a
much more
one.
Violent one. Yeah.
But
yeah, the state loves it when people put themselves into groups, because then the people have done the work for them. They pit themselves against each other.
Right. And it's so apropos to government. It's almost like it was designed, this collectivization idea of culture was designed for government because government is essentially one size fits all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there might be different programs for different income brackets, you know, hence one size doesn't fit all. But one government must fit all the people under that government. People don't have a choice. And if and sometimes the government will violently take over another country, then those people are forced to have the same one government.
Right.
And one, you know, one set of rules for schools. For 300 million people in this country have one set of rules. One government is one size fits all, and that's why culture seems to work for it. Because if you say, well, you must be a hippie, well, then one idea must fit all those people. And that's kind of like how government works, right?
Yeah. Yes, I see what you're saying. Although I wouldn't use the term one size fits all. I would say one size crushes all, because that's basically what they do. They don't even attempt to fit. So it's funny, because I've always viewed sports as an extremely statist thing. And the here's the reason why. Because people root for sports teams based on arbitrary criteria that they did not choose.
Like where they were born. I grew up near this team. I must root for them all the time.
Yes.
I love them. Why? Have you ever met any of them?
No.
Do they do good things for you and your school or your house? No. They just, everyone around you likes them.
Exactly. And it feels good when they win. People want, quote, their team to win.
Yeah,
I mean, they do this in politics, too, of course. It's
their
essentially
team.
The same thing.
Well,
but,
the difference, go on.
Most sports, like I'm thinking of American football, that's essentially a metaphor for war. I mean, what, it's like one team gaining ground on the other team and, you know, taking it back, and then they fight in the middle and they tackle each other, and it's very violent. And sometimes the fans get violent with each other. There are just so
more
many
so
sports
in European football.
That's true, too. Although, wow, I mean, I just think of American football as the ultimate violent fantasy that people act out, you know, and they just love it. They love rooting for their team and hating the other team and saying, talking smack to the other team. And and they love watching these jacked guys who represent the military, essentially, get on that field and beat each other up and hurt each other. And it's sick. I'm sorry for anyone who likes football, but that's...
Well, there's a difference between liking football and...
being a fanatic fan?
Yes.
That hurts other fans that don't
right.
like the other team?
And there's a difference between liking football, like you go out and play once in a while because it's exercise and a fun game with friends.
Oh.
And liking football and rooting for a team and getting angry when someone roots for the other team and painting your face because that's what people do and whatever.
And saying you like that team because you were born on an arbitrary plot of land.
And, you know, shunning your family to watch a game on Sunday night or whatever. There's a difference between, I'll play football, it's kind of fun, and that.
Yeah, I agree. Although it's all sports and, like, the Democrats and the Republicans and anything where there's this team mentality. It just reminds me of... It's essentially like a smaller version of nationalism, right? Because people who are nationalistic,
us versus them.
Some people call it patriotic, but it's really just, you know, blind devotion to the nation, which is an abstract concept based on the government of an arbitrary geopolitical designation.
Mm-hmm.
When people are devoted to a country or the idea of a nation, just because they happened to be born there and they hate others because they weren't born in the same arbitrary plot of land that they were born on, then it starts to get dangerous, because then it sets up the basis for war, which is governments enriching themselves and sending people.
It's an ism, like racism. You don't like someone just because of the color of their skin, or nationalism. You don't like someone because they weren't born in the same area as you.
Yes. Yeah,
it says nothing about
the
individual.
Yeah, again, it's an arbitrary characteristic that you hate someone for that they did not choose and cannot control.
Right.
And it's tragic.
I would change what you said slightly. I think you said that people who are born in a land love it and blah, 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 et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would say even some people who hate the country they're born in and then move to another and love it, it's the same thing. Even though they've chosen a different country, they're still choosing an arbitrary reason to hate people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this mentality manifests...
A group of people, I should have said.
Right.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. This whole mentality of nationalism manifests itself when people don't want to buy products that come from people who made them in other countries or whatever.
Right.
Because they want the Americans to get the
right
profit to save their jobs or whatever. Yeah. Why? I mean, everyone around the world has make a living.
Jobs, right.
You know, if they make a good product and you're getting something you want, they're getting something they want.
Yeah.
But they're still a human being. They
you know,
still
you know people who say buy local.
Yeah.
What is that a culture?
I guess it could be considered a culture. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess
localist or
yeah,
whatever.
Or everybody. Maybe it's the same as an American culture. It's just my neighborhood culture.
Yeah.
Or my local, you know, farmer's market culture or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, if you take buy local to its absurd conclusion, then you're making all your own clothes
right.
and all your own, growing all your own food on your own land.
forging your own metal for eyeglasses.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it starts to get ridiculous. Although I can see that there are certain benefits to, for instance, if you buy, if we live in New Hampshire and during the summer we buy vegetables that are grown in New Hampshire, then we don't have to worry about shipping those vegetables in from Mexico
or
whatever.
Oh, yeah, there can be advantages to it, sure.
Yeah, and maybe that's cheaper and it's good, but, yeah. And that would be advantageous for us. But the point is I would have no problem trading my money with someone who was in Mexico to get strawberries in
winter.
In winter or even in the summer. Who cares? I mean, they're a human being and they, you know, I can make a voluntary trade agreement with them too.
But they have a different culture than us.
They do. And that's what I was saying before about cultures and nationalism particularly being a setup for war.
Yeah.
Because when people are just arbitrarily devoted to a country. I guess it's not even devotion. It just seems like devotion because devotion should be based on shared values and
love. It's like a religion. It's like blind faith.
Yes.
I love this country because why? I don't know.
Yeah. I just love it.
I was born here because I'm supposed to love it because everyone around me tells me to love it.
And then there's that love it or leave it.
Yeah.
Like the other people around you enforce that on you. If you don't love America, get out.
Yeah.
Right? You're not one of us who loves America. You're one of them.
Them, us and them. Right.
Right, and Absolutely. it's this in-group, out-group
so that's kind
mentality.
Of what culture is. I'm sure there's ways to use culture positively,
mm-hmm.
but that's what I see it as a collectivization of us versus them.
Yeah, yeah, and it's. I was trying to finish this thought.
Oh,
like,
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. We just got derailed. But the thing I wanted to say about this was that nationalism sets up war because people look at themselves as the in-group and others as the out-group. And when you see other people as not human beings, as different from you in a fundamental way, as not having that humanity in common with you, then it's super easy to kill them. I mean, just look at how many news articles you can find on the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, anywhere. Libya, Obama just bombed, right?
Yeah. The Libyan culture, the Iraqi culture.
Well, but these news articles will say things like, big fight in whatever city today, 3 Americans, 1,000 others died.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like people care about the 3 Americans who read these newspapers in America, but they're like, oh, well, 1,000 or a million Iraqis, well, who cares, you know?
Right.
And they're just viewed as not human beings. And that's what, I mean, there was just a news release that said in the Middle East, there are American soldiers. This is so disturbing.
Oh,
I almost have trouble. I really do have trouble talking about this, but it's important. There was a news release that said that U.S. soldiers were taking people, and I almost can't say this, but taking people and holding them up.
Dead people.
Dead corpses by their hair. And
I believe civilians, actually.
Civilians, yes. Civilians. And, you know, the corpses are like not even fully dressed. Oftentimes they're holding these human beings' bodies up as trophies. And it's extremely disturbing. I would rather be poor than pay for this, really. I mean, it's disgusting. It's the lowest form of human interaction. And this is all made possible by
us versus them.
By us versus them, by not viewing other people as human beings just because they're from some arbitrary plot of land that's different from the one that you happen to be born on.
Or, you know what, or other reasons that are not not sufficient to hate or kill someone. Like maybe
religion, maybe.
Yeah, maybe they have they believe in
the
a different
basis
God
for
than
almost
you.
Every war in history.
Right.
Yeah.
The second biggest killer is religion, just under government, right?
Right.
Anyway,
right.
Any reason like that. Your skin's darker than mine. Let's kill them all. You believe in a different God. Let's kill them all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's just so saddening that people can create these arbitrary distinctions and start to look at people that are human beings as something that's not human. And then these atrocities happen.
Yeah.
And it's just a blight on humanity. It's so sad. So I guess we talked about the downsides of culture or the dark sides. Can you think of any positives to culture? Cause I can't really, I mean, I'm a hardcore individualist. What do you think?
I'm a hardcore individualist as well. There's reasons for groups, at least as a concept.
Yep.
There's probably, but you know, you also said earlier that groups don't create anything, individuals do, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you to a mostly, but if there's, you know, I can't build a car, but me and two friends, or so many friends, can.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do everything, but I know how to build a carb, and Frank knows how to, you know, make rubber or to make tires or whatever. Mm-hmm. So together, if we work together, we can build a car. Now, the group didn't build a car. A couple individuals did.
Yep.
But it's close.
Yeah.
But a positive meaning or a positive use of culture. I'm sure there is one. I just don't quite know it. You know, I just have the feeling that...
Well, what if we flip this around and do you think there's a liberty activist culture?
Sure, absolutely. And I don't like it.
You don't like it. Do you want to elaborate on that?
No, but what's your point? Do I think there's a liberty activist culture? Yes, I see what you mean, and I think there is.
Yes, I also think there is. And that culture, meaning like, you know, behaviors or beliefs that are typical of certain people.
Liberty activists.
That are typical of people in a group.
Right.
By that definition, yes, there's a liberty activist culture. And being in that culture, I guess you could say, even though I hate to say this because I want to consider myself an individualist, I guess you could say I'm in that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm influenced to a certain extent by the ideas that many people have who are in this group.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to sound collectivist at all, but knowing that there's a community of people here who believe that it's okay to do things and it's not morally wrong in any way, and in fact it's good to do things like, for instance, film police,
mm-hmm.
and are even willing to be arrested for it and are willing to back up each other when they are with, you know, good PR
mm-hmm.
and support and financial support and, you know, legal help and all that. That, I guess, gives me a sense of security. Like, hey, there are these people in this culture. And I guess I'm influenced by that a little bit to drop my fear of doing things like interacting with cops or whatever.
That's interesting because what we've talked about so far is essentially that culture is us versus them. And that's bad. It's typically bad.
Yeah, and I see a lot of us versus them in liberty activists and cops on both sides.
That's probably, liberty activists versus cops, yes, but I think also there's subcultures within the liberty activist culture that is us versus them.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting is you just pointed out, I think trying to point out what's positive about culture is kind of an us with us, not an us versus them. You're saying a benefit of culture is that you are assured or near other people that have similar whatever.
Yeah, you're validating
values,
I guess,
or
ideas or
behaviors or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're not only validating, you're just near it. It's affecting you, and you know who you want to be around things you like. If you like how you behave, you want to be around other people who behave the same way. So that is a benefit. Association, would you call that?
I don't know what you would call it. Maybe validation or
okay.
I don't know. I want to say something like about preaching to the choir or something like that.
Maybe.
Like, why do people listen to news sources that they that espouse views that they already agree with? Like, not many people's minds are changed by news sources.
By anything, actually.
Well, yeah, you're right. Not many people's minds are changed by anything, really.
They listen to debates and they root for their team. They don't hear other ideas.
Yeah.
They listen to the news of all the different news channels. They listen to the one that's biased towards their same bias.
Right.
They don't want new ideas. They want to hear what they already know.
Right.
Or they want to hear someone else say what they think, I guess.
So then how are we, as liberty activists, different from the New England Patriots fans? I obviously, one difference is that we're not violent and that we do value individualism explicitly.
Well, I want, if it's us versus them, I want the them to be as free as the us. Patriots fans want Patriots to win.
yeah,
and the other teams to lose.
Yeah.
So that's a difference.
Yeah. I suppose you're right. Win. Yeah. So you're saying that maybe the Liberty activist culture is looking to create kind of a win-win situation, whereas these other cultures like the sports fans and the Dems and the Republicans and the nationalistic, you know, right, this country versus that country.
Or religion versus religion.
Or religion versus religion. They're not really looking for a win-win situation. They want their team to win.
Right.
And the other team to
lose.
That's
a possible
difference. Yeah, I think that's a good distinction to draw. Sure.
Feels good anyway.
Because it validates our ideas.
Yeah, anyway, right.
So
maybe that's the name of the show, Validation. The Validation Culture.
Preaching to the choir. Okay. Culture.
We just validation came up with three culture names.
Well, we'll pick one of them.
Yep.
We don't know which. We're just, we're on the fly. Anyway, so I'm just scanning through this question and trying to see if I think we answered it. And,
well, no question. What are our thoughts on culture? And we went off on a lot of tangents, but I think we talked about culture.
Yeah. And it definitely, we definitely talked about culture and how it relates to liberty.
Yep.
Right. And statism as well. And I'm sure we're going to get a lot of angry emails from
Patriots
fans. You know, even the name of that football team is
the Patriots.
I mean, like, there are so many sports teams that have horrible names.
Yeah.
What about the Redskins?
The Redskins.
It's horrible. Thanks for asking this question asker. If we didn't do
If we didn't do good, let us know, like Stephanie was going to say. But also, send us one more email or voicemail would be even better.
Sure.
419-PT-LOVE-4, and let us know what you think of culture. I mean, you said it's used too loosely, but what do you think about good or bad? Or
right.
Yeah.
And therapize us about our cognitive dissonance about liking grammar, I guess you could say. Despite the fact that, you know, we recognize that all relationships should be voluntary and that the rules of language could be fluid or whatever.
They kind of are, too.
They definitely are. Actually,
I used to be much more strict about grammar, too, by the way, or at least not I used to be more strict about grammar, but much more strict about word definitions. But now I realize that language is fluid and it changes, and I'm okay with some of that. But anyway, that again, we're on a tangent in the closure.
We can't help ourselves. No. We just keep going on.
We're on the tangent culture.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Anyway, so thanks for listening, and don't forget to visit our website, porctherapy.com, right?
That's right. From there, you can listen to all our other shows, all our old shows, and comment on them, and send us emails and do all kinds of things.
Yeah, you can find out how to ask us your relationship questions, because we are the show about voluntary relationships, right?
Yep.
Indeed. And I guess that wraps up our show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host this show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, because Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4.